This is Legacy Chatterbox, number 102, for August 2024. Your narrators are Wendy Hinson and David Tredinnick. Contents. Track 1. Opening announcement. Track 2. This table of contents. Track 3. From the editor. Track 4. President's report. Track 5. CEO update. Track 6. Social club news. Track 7. Eric Flood, OAM, life story. Track 8, Duke of Edinburgh Adventurous Journey. Track 9, Legacy Week 2024. Track 10, Centenarians. Track 11, Anzac Day Central Coast 2024. Track 12, Mother's Day. Track 13, Widows Social Clubs. Track 14, History of the Central Coast, Mangrove Mountain. Track 15, Legatees Public Relations. Track 16, Southern Launch Work Experience. Track 17, Poem, A Dog's Life. Track 18, Outsmarting a Computer. Track 19, Book Review, Lies My Mother Told Me. Track 20, Kathy's Kitchen. Track 21, Widows Social Club Meetings. Track 22, From Our Readers. Track 23, Vale. Track 24, Marketing and Nuisance Calls. Track 25, Chatterbox on Audio CD. Track 26, Continuing Our Legacy of Care. Track 27, The Lighter Side of Life. Track 28, In the Garden with Ros Bailey. Track 29, Advertisements. Track 30, Contact Details. Track 31, Publishing and Copyright Statement. Track 32, Closing Announcement. From the editor, Legatee David Ferry. Welcome to our August edition of Chatterbox. In this edition, we commemorate Anzac Day services throughout the Central Coast, especially at Gosford, where the cenotaph turns 100 years old. A special mention to Merrill Jackson, our Central Coast heritage historian, who laid a carpet of handmade poppies around the base of the memorial. We devote another article in recognising and congratulating those esteemed ladies amongst us who have become centenarians since August last year. We share their thoughts and stories. We have a pictorial coverage in the print edition of this newsletter of our Mother's Day luncheon, with great entertainment provided by our wonderful guest artists Joey Fermano and Jessica Di Bartolo. It was an enjoyable, fun-filled day, with a sad note that this would be the last function held in the Legacy Hall at the Village. Elizabeth Ward addressed the luncheon with a moving speech, which we have included. We have also included a follow-on story from our last edition, the life story of Legatee Eric Flood, OAM, a very interesting and inspirational read. Our social club news covers all events our beneficiaries participated in over the last 3 months. We cover our Central Coast Legacy Race Day, celebrating our new name, Central Coast Legacy. Our History of the Central Coast this month covers the historic Mangrove Mountain region. All our normal articles are covered, including the relaunch of the Central Coast New South Wales Legacy Torchbearers and their upcoming fundraising events. We also look into what our busy Legacy PR committee have been up to. Legatee David Ferry, Editor. President's Report. From Legatee Patrick Gallagher, CSC, President. We live, as always, in changing circumstances, but while the times may change, the annual cycle of life continues, and several events have occurred since my last Chatterbox message. The annual Legacy Race Day, held at Gosford on the 16th of March, was an enormously successful event, due in large part to the efforts of our staff. While I was unable to attend, I understand the venue was outstanding and the event was well patronised by beneficiaries, donors and legatees. On behalf of the board, I thank all those who took part on the day or were involved in delivering the event. The annual scholarship presentation luncheon, held at Gosford on the 16th of April, was a most successful event due to the efforts of the scholarship committee and our very dedicated staff. I wrote to David Harris, MP, to thank him for presenting the scholarship certificates to the recipients and for his continuing support. David spoke with me over lunch about how impressed he was with the scholarship program. As always, well done to the committee. This year, the pleasant weather ensured that the Anzac Day commemorations held at Point Frederick and across the Central Coast were well attended by our beneficiaries, legatees and the public. Central Coast legacy legatees and representatives laid wreaths at Etalong, Evergreen, Gosford, Greenpoint, Hardy's Bay, Urimba, Palmdale, Point Frederick, Terrigal, Tookley, Copacabana and Woi Woi. At Gosford, Liesl Tesh, AM MP, paraded with the legacy group in the march to the cenotaph. In addition to the usual community, Australian Defence Force ex-service organisations and government representatives, the centenary commemoration service was attended by several thousand members of the public. Indeed, the Central Coast District Council of RSLs reported sub-branches throughout the region reported huge increases in attendee numbers over previous years. Lest we forget. You would all recall that Legatee Eric Flood was awarded the Order of Australia Medal, OAM, in this year's Australia Day Honours List. On Tuesday the 21st of May, Eric travelled to Government House for his investiture. The return journey by private limousine was made possible due to the generosity of Jack Wade, OAM. Again, many congratulations to Eric Flood, OAM. Finally, all club members and village residents would be aware of our plans for change and broad timings of future events at Point Frederick. As always, those who are affected will be kept up to date and consulted throughout. As I have said many times, everyone should note that the ability to provide both emergency and affordable housing for beneficiaries in need will remain an immutable core objective and capability of our club now and well into the future. Warmest regards to all. Legatee Patrick Gallagher, CSC, President. CEO Update. From Peter Lawley, OAM, Chief Executive Officer. As outlined in our December 2023 edition of Chatterbox, the decision not to proceed with the redevelopment of our legacy village was made due to financial challenges for such a significant development. I am pleased to advise that Central Coast Legacy will continue to provide affordable housing rental units for our beneficiaries in a location next door to our current site at Point Frederick, which Legacy will rent from the developer in a long-term lease. In addition, we will retain the York Street site and apartments, with a subdivision development application currently lodged with Central Coast Council. All current Legacy residents will be relocated once the building works are complete, with this anticipated to occur later this year. These units are available to our entire Central Coast Legacy beneficiaries, so if you are interested, either contact the office or talk to your welfare team member. In regard to our future events, we have made arrangements initially with Gosford RSL Club to hold our annual Christmas gathering, as well as the 2025 Mother's Day event. The new Gosford RSL boasts an impressive function area, with quality food and staff serving. We will continue to provide transport to and from this new venue. It will be somewhat of a change given the hard work our staff have done for the past 9 years in preparing the Legacy Hall and cooking and serving all the wonderful meals over the years, but the staff will appreciate the change moving forward. We will continue to provide high-quality entertainers at these events. Peter Lawley, OAM, Chief Executive Officer. The new Central Coast New South Wales Legacy website is now live. Visit us at www.ccclegacy.com.au.
Social Club News. Tookley Social Club. Our meetings have been well attended this year. As of May, Jessica took Michael's place, keeping us all informed about Legacy, assisted by Karen and Bill. As usual, the bus trips with Chris have been very popular, with the bus full of ladies and reserves on the waiting list. So don't forget to inform the Legacy office, 4323 4977, if you are unable to come. Our first bus trip this year was to the High Tide Cafe, Brooklyn, where we enjoyed fish and chips, and our morning coffee was at Gosford RSL beside the new building in progress, where we will be having our Legacy Christmas lunch at the end of the year. We have had two popular additional outings, first at Gosford Racecourse, where the rain did not deter us from having our bets, and later lunch was served by the staff, and a Mother's Day lunch at the Legacy Hall, which was beautifully decorated with sparkling lights and butterflies. Joey and Jessica, who have entertained us on previous occasions, were most enjoyable. Thank you to the Legacy staff and helpers for all your hard work in providing two very special days. Our April bus trip to Davistown started with our driver Chris, Rex our helper, and a bus full of ladies and heavy rain. First stop was Heatherbrae Pies, Urumba, with the pleasant aroma of pies cooking as we had our coffee. As we arrived at Woi Woi, our ferry was pulling in at the wharf and the sun was shining. The water was calm and a crew member gave a very interesting commentary on the history and scenic areas to visit as we continue on our way to Central Wharf, where our bus was waiting to take us on a scenic drive around the area before heading to Davistown RSL for lunch. The March bus trip was to Currumbong and a browse in the Elephant Shop, where gifts and crystals could be purchased, and a drive around part of Lake Macquarie, where the boats on the lake and the surrounding parks always look beautiful. In May, we went to Y.E. Nursery for lunch, which was a disappointment as the menu was limited. They only recently reopened the coffee shop. I'm sure their menu will improve, as it has always been a popular place to visit. Monday the 3rd of June will be our next meeting with Jessica, and our June bus trip will be to Asquith Golf Club. Sadly, my friend and co-author Diane passed away on Monday the 13th of May after a short illness. Diane enjoyed working for the Chatterbox magazine and always made sure it was ready early for Michael to take for printing. Diane McCarran and Hazel Duckett. Wattle Social Club. Welcome to Chatterbox for our mid-year issue. We certainly know winter is upon us. Our year so far. Together we enjoyed a great day out at Gosford Racecourse for our Central Coast Legacy Race Day. The weather was mostly fine and we had great attendance of our legacy ladies. Our Mother's Day luncheon was another lovely day, well attended as always. The staff and legatees served up a great lunch, which was very appreciated. Thank you to our legatees for their great service. We've had some enjoyable bus trips, the most recent to Goulston Gorge. The scenery was fantastic. We look forward to our meeting days, held on the first and third Thursday of the month, 10:15 a.m. to 12 noon at Erinner Leagues Club. Please come and join us at bingo. Looking forward to meeting any newcomers. If interested in joining or for any inquiries, please contact the Legacy Office, phone 02-4323-4977. Patricia Young, Wattle Club member. The Entrance Long Jetty Social Club. Hello again. I can't believe it's that time already. Half the year has already flown by. It won't be long until I'm wishing you all a Merry Christmas. Since our last article, we've been keeping busy at our meetings and attending functions organised by the legatees and staff. First function being the race day at the entertainment grounds to launch Central Coast Legacy. We got on the coach organised by Legacy from Diggers at the entrance, rain not stopping us, and arrived at the entertainment grounds. We were warm and comfortable in our own sectioned-off area inside the stands. Each of the tables had a staff member or legatee who would get our drinks and help us decide which horse we wanted to choose for the race. Legacy provided each table with money to place bets. The ladies at the table with the biggest winnings would each receive a $50 gift card. Jessica sat with us and would take our tips and place the bets for us. And after the first four races, our table was the winner. The winnings, of course, going back to Legacy. It was such an outstanding day. Although the races were abandoned after race four due to the weather, it didn't bother us because that's when the coaches were leaving to head back home anyway. Thank you to those who helped organise the race day. We have also had the annual Mother's Day luncheon at Legacy. The food was delicious as always, and we were entertained by Joey and Jessica. The hall was covered in butterflies. There were butterflies all over the walls, the centrepieces, butterflies on our wine glasses, and even butterflies on our cheesecakes. It was absolutely beautiful. The staff did an amazing job. Each month, our bus trips have been to various places, including Barara Waters, Cardiff RSL, and Eden Cafe, Currumbong. We are so grateful to have these trips available for us each month. Recently, Angela has taken over as the welfare advocate at our meetings each month, so I would like to take this opportunity to welcome her and also thank Jessica for all of her effort toward our social group over the years. Jessica is now coordinating the Tookley and Sunflower Widows groups. Sunflower Social Club. Here we are again, now a few weeks into winter and really starting to feel the crisp cold in the mornings, although it's lovely in the winter sun. We have been busy at the Sunflower meetings and have had many different guest speakers and entertainers, such as Older Persons Advocacy Network, OPAN, Driving Miss Daisy, Carol Hewken, Bush Poet. We've also had our own private St. Patrick's and Mother's Day celebrations within our group. We also had a lovely commemorative Anzac Day morning tea with Anzac biscuits, of course, and a lovely rendition of The Last Post played on violin. The launch of Central Coast New South Wales Legacy at the Entertainment Grounds was a fabulous day, despite the horrible weather. The food and service were great, and the mini-games that were organised by the legatees were such a joy. Our table didn't have much luck on the horses when we were to work together to pick a winner for the first four races, although it was a fun experience nonetheless. Thank you to all those involved in making the day wonderful for us all. On that note, I cannot go on without mentioning the Mother's Day luncheon. It felt like walking into a butterfly garden. The hall was beautifully decorated as always, and the entertainment by Joey and Jessica was thoroughly enjoyed. The food was delicious, and even the edible butterfly on the cheesecake was just so amazing. Thank you again to those involved in decorating and the effort you all go to for us ladies. Our bus trips have had good numbers these last few months, with destinations such as Henry Kendall Cottage, Wye Nursery and Mangrove Mountain Golf Club. We are now looking forward to having a yummy Christmas in July roast lunch at our next meeting at the Etalong Diggers Club. Until next time, stay warm. Rosemary Social Club. Welcome to winter. May it soon be over. Despite the cold and sometimes rain, we can still get together to socialise, which is so important for our well-being. Some of our ladies have had health issues and we wish them well. In May, we were shocked and saddened to learn of the passing of our lovely Di, such a happy and caring person. Although numbers are low for meetings and bus trips, we appreciate the effort put in by legacy staff and attending legatees. It's nice to meet, for us, new legatees. Chris always takes us via the scenic route on bus trips, and despite living here for most of my life, there are still places new to see and to lunch at. We all enjoyed, despite the heavy rain, the legacy race day at Gosford. Some had a little flutter, but unfortunately our table's choice of horses was unsuccessful, not picking a winner at all. As they say, it's a mug's game. The three-course meal, though, was a winner. The Mother's Day luncheon was again so enjoyable, with Joey and Jessica entertaining. The staff and legatees made us feel extra special and welcome, and it's great to catch up with our ladies from the south. Our meetings are held at the ARY Tookley at 10:15 a.m, and transport is arranged from Gosford, with enough time for lunch before returning to Gosford, so do consider contacting the office and joining us. You'd be more than welcome. Ruth Condon. Social Bus Report. Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to our August Chatterbox Social Bus Report. As I write this report, it's the shortest day of the year, so we know summer is on the way. So winter has struck with a vengeance, however that hasn't dampened the spirits of our brave travellers. Our bus has been very busy travelling around the Central Coast and further afield. We have been to some wonderful destinations, with several of them repeat visits due to their popularity and enjoyment by our ladies. Some of the places we have visited include Henry Kendall Cottage, Asquith Golf Club, Wye Nursery, Etalong Bowling Club, and Swansea RSL, to name a few. The venues all offer a different array of cuisine for a variety of different tastes. Many of our travellers also avail themselves of the takeaway option as well. That means if their meal is too large, they can take half of it home for dinner that night. Another popular option is to order a sweet or dessert after lunch and take that home with them as well. Some of our ladies order the smaller children's meal where available, and some of them share meals. However way you want to go, there's a way to enjoy your meal without feeling too full. In the coming months, we plan to visit Mangrove Mountain Golf Club, Cardiff RSL, Eden Cafe, and many other places, all of which are regular stopping-off points on our list. As the weather warms up, we will get back to some ferry trips, either to Davistown or Palm Beach. Once again, I would like to sincerely thank our fantastic group of legatees who give of their time to accompany us on our trips and keep our ladies safe during the outings. This group of people are what Legacy stands for, and without their love and concern for the safety and welfare of our ladies, our trips would not be the same. Thank you all so much for what you do. If you have never been on our bus trips or haven't been for a while, we would love to see you. Just call the Legacy office and they will organise for you to be put in touch with a social club in your area. Finally, on another note, did you know you can recycle batteries? Some of the ladies in Legacy Village bring me their old batteries from various devices, which I then deposit in receptacles in shopping centres for recycling. If you would like to help the environment or just want to make a small difference to our e-waste, I would be happy to take your old batteries when you come on our bus trips. Looking forward to seeing you on our next outing. Happy travels, Chris. Are you having trouble attending widows' clubs because of mobility or transport reasons? Call the Legacy office on 4323 4977 for assistance. Central Coast, New South Wales Legacy Torchbearers. By the time this comes out in Chatterbox, we will be well into 2024. We are changing our name to Central Coast, New South Wales Legacy Torchbearers, aiming at having more involvement with our southern friends. We are looking at having social meetings both in the south and north of the coast to catch up with a coffee and chat. We are looking at legacy beneficiaries, their families or friends who would like to join us. There is no cost involved, but if anyone can help with cooking or crafts, that would be a bonus. We may even be able to help you with some out-of-pocket costs. Our main events are Harry Moore Memorial Legacy Golf Day will be held at Tookley Golf Club, Sunday the 8th of September 2024. At this event, we hold a giant raffle, all profits going to Central Coast New South Wales Legacy. Ladies Legacy Golf Day held on Tuesday the 22nd of October 2024. We hold a smaller raffle and sell our cakes, jams, pickles and some crafts. Garden Party held 27th of October from 9:30 to 3 p.m. at the home of Legatee Nun and partner Bill's house at 17 McDonough Road, Wyong. Bill does a fantastic job with his garden of pirates and other themes, adding something different each year. We serve sandwiches, cakes, tea, coffee and drinks at a small cost. We also have a raffle and sell pickles and cakes. If you or anyone you know is interested, please do not hesitate to contact me on the details below. Sue Hartis. Phone 0414 701 489. Email hartaz@bigpond.net.au. Garden Party at Wyong. Just imagine, after we get through this cold, wet and miserable winter, it will be spring and we'll be sitting in our favourite sunny spot, soaking up all the energy the sun offers. Our gardens will be giving us their best blooms, rich colours and those delicious veggies. Bill and I will be opening our garden again this year for all who enjoy looking at gardens and for those of you who like to sit with friends and enjoy a cuppa by the river with those delicious cakes, scones and slices. The Central Coast Legacy Torchbearer group of ladies prepare for the refreshments. Our garden could only be described as eclectic, a mixture of old growth trees in the centre, a winding wooden pathway and undergrowth of coloured plants from black bat plants to startling bright bromeliads. The side areas are filled with a variety of colours and textures that will warm your heart. The veggie plot is my private little patch, but Bill cannot help himself and has to assist me with my endeavours to grow the best-tasting herbaceous plants in the area. There are many structures Bill built just for fun, and I worry when he is at loose end just what artistic installation will end up as his latest project. We welcome everyone who would like to come along. It is a good place to spend a few hours looking at the garden, having a cuppa, and something delicious to munch on, or just having a chat with a few of our ladies, and they do love a chinwag. Date, Sunday the 27th of October 2024. Time, 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Address, 17 McDonough Road, Wyong, 2259. Cost. There is no cost for viewing the garden. Refreshments, $10 per adult. Children, $5. You won't be disappointed. Bill and Carolyn. Widows Social Club Meetings. Sunflower Club meets at Etalong Beach Diggers Club on the first and third Friday of each month at 10 a.m. with a monthly social outing on the third Wednesday of each month. The Entrance Long Jetty Widows Club meet at Diggers at the Entrance on the third Monday of each month at 10 a.m. and a monthly social outing is the first Wednesday of each month. Tookley Widows Club meets at the Ari, Tookley, on the first Monday of each month at 10 a.m. with a social outing on the third Thursday of each month. Wattle Club meets at Erina Leagues Club on the first and third Thursday of the month at 10 a.m. with a social outing on the fourth Friday of each month. Rosemary Widows Club meet at the Ari, Tookley, on the second Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. with the social outing on the fourth Wednesday of the month. For further information about our social clubs, please call 4323 4977. Eric Flood, OAM, Life Story. Eric was born at home on the 23rd of August 1925 in Yenda, one of five children and the only son. His father was a World War I veteran, and he was allocated a settler block as part of a push to develop the Murrumbidgee irrigation area. He recalls the family not having a phone until he was 12 years of age, and the family car was an old cut-down Oakland. Eric and his sisters were expected, as most children on farms were in those days, to assist with jobs around the farm. Eric attended school in Yenda up until sixth class. He and his siblings rode their bikes to school, although one sister often rode her horse, and when she was feeling kindly disposed towards Eric, she allowed him to double back on the horse with her. He attended Griffith High School and obtained his leaving certificate in 1942. His father had always told him that he was built to push a pen, so upon leaving school, he joined the Water Irrigation Commission, where he worked for the next 8 months. When he turned 18 in August 1943, Eric enlisted and moved to Sydney and was drafted into the infantry. He was sent to Warwick in Queensland for training and then to Canungra for jungle training for 1 month. Eric was drafted into the 2nd 9th Australian Infantry Battalion and was sent to Atherton. In July 1945, the 7th Division, of which Eric's unit was one, engaged in a seaborne landing at Balikpapan, Borneo, and although peace was declared 3 months later, it was not before 225 Australian lives were lost. What struck Eric at this time was the vulnerability of life. He recalls an older soldier on the landing craft saying to him, "Floody, it doesn't matter what school you went to, it's what you do that counts." Later, Eric was transferred to Rabaul in PNG, where his company supervised the intake of Japanese POWs. Shortly after discharge in 1946, Eric applied for teacher training through the Commonwealth Reconstruction Training Scheme, CRTS, and was awarded a teacher's scholarship in February 1947. He underwent teacher training for the next 2 years, during which he met Doreen Crabtree, who was later to become Mrs. Flood. He served in a number of country schools over the ensuing years, Ardleton, Wallerawang, Rosewood, Merriwa, and Broken Hill. During this time, Eric commenced tertiary studies through the University of Armidale and after 3 years was awarded a Bachelor of Arts with a major in education. After some years, he was appointed as an inspector of schools and later was put in charge of in-service teacher training in the St George area. Eric retired in 1985 at the age of 60. Eric's association with Legacy began in Lithgow in 1969. Lithgow Legacy was then a division of Sydney Legacy. He and his Legacy comrades were instrumental in setting up Operation Jenolan Caves, whereby Legacy children from Sydney were billeted with local families for a night and taken the next day to see the Jenolan Caves. Eric served as secretary at Lithgow Legacy. Upon moving to Sydney, Eric joined St George Legacy, which had responsibility for 4,000 widows. Eric recalls that the work of the legatee back then was much more to do with families than in the present day, where the bulk of legatee beneficiaries are elderly. Eric was chairman of St George Legacy for a year and was member of the Personnel Committee of Sydney Legacy. As chairman of the Pensions Committee, he assisted widows with their pension applications. Eric has assisted Legacy widows with their pension applications for well over 30 years. St George Legacy initiated annual prize givings, during which junior legatees were awarded prizes donated by local businesses for their efforts at school. Eric and Doreen moved to the Central Coast in 1998 and joined Brisbane Water Legacy, BWL. He was especially impressed that BWL welcomed women and those with a non-military background into the ranks of the legatees and the initiatives which flowed from this, supported by the wonderful staff at BWL. Eric has served Legacy and Central Coast New South Wales Legacy in particular with great dignity and compassion for well over the past 50 years. He was an inaugural member of the CCL Scholarship Committee and is still a member and was its chairman for 5 years. He also served as chairman of Chatterbox for 6 years, during which time he presided over its revamp. Eric is highly regarded by his colleagues, not only for his intellect, wisdom and common sense view of the world, but for his enduring kindness and courtesy towards all those he encounters, widows, staff and legatees alike. Eric has a wonderful speaking voice, and his recital of In Flanders Fields, or The Ode, is an especially moving experience. He has served Legacy tirelessly for over 50 years. His colleagues in CCL congratulate him on achieving this impressive milestone, and we are certain that he has a special place in the hearts of all the widows and families he has assisted during the course of his 50 years in Legacy. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man, in his time, plays many parts. As You Like It, William Shakespeare. Eric Flood, OAM. Medal of the Order of Australia, OAM, in the General Division, Mr. Eric George Flood, for services to veterans and their families. Brisbane Water, New South Wales Legacy. Legatee since 1998. Member, Pensions Committee since 1990s. Former Chairman, Pensions Committee. Membership, Scholarship Committee, current. Former Chairman, Scholarship Committee, 5 years. Former Chairman, Chatterbox Quarterly News Magazine, 6 years. Legacy, other. Former Chairman, St George Legacy. Former Secretary, Lithgow Legacy. Former Member and Committee Member, Sydney Legacy. Member, Legacy since 1969. Awards and recognition include Seniors Community Award, Central Coast Community, 2021.
Duke of Edinburgh Adventurer's Journey. Hi there, my name is Kean Hill. I would just like to share one of the great experiences that Central Coast Legacy has helped me achieve. My Gold Duke of Edinburgh Adventurer's Journey was a 9-day hike up in the Kosciuszko mountain range where the distance was 130 kilometres and with a pack of 23 kilos. There were 6 other people on this adventure with me, 5 other kids, 2 boys and 3 girls, and an outward bound instructor named Gus, who taught me navigation and some small survival tricks. One of the things I liked most about this trip was that it challenged me mentally and physically. Another awesome thing is when we started to get to the top of those mountains, the view was absolutely astonishing and one of the best I've ever seen. One morning I got up earlier than everyone else and climbed on top of this rocky outcrop and watched the sun rise over the mountains. Another night, we all watched one of the best sunsets together. Gus was an amazing instructor and taught me all about how to read a map properly with a compass. I won't lie, it took me a while to get there, but I got there eventually. The hardest part of the adventure for me wasn't the actual walk, it was getting up in the morning because it was so cold outside, but nice and warm in my sleeping bag. Overall, I would like to thank Legacy with all my heart for making this journey possible and giving me the chance to push myself. I've made some fantastic friends who I've kept in touch with, and I've learnt more about what I am capable of achieving.
Legacy Week 2024. History of Legacy Week. The Australian Commonwealth Military Forces came into being with 28,923 colonial soldiers. Australian forces showed courage, valour and strength in the wars to come that shook the entire world. They supported Allied powers wherever they could without hesitation. But the war brought casualties to Australia as well. Legacy was founded in 1923 by Major General Sir John Gellibrand to assist the families of armed forces personnel who lost loved ones in the war and assist defence officers who lost their health. The organisation extended its helping hand to help those defence officers suffering from PTSD from experiencing the violence of the wars. Legacy works through volunteers who are called legatees. Currently, legatees assist more than 40,000 widows, 1,800 children and disabled dependents. Legacy provides them with assistance, accommodation and medical and social support free of cost. Legacy's assistance also depends on the situation of the person being supported. Legatees stay in touch with families, and Legacy ensures they receive proper legacy entitlements and access to government benefits. Legacy started with the idea that the returned servicemen would take on the duty of supporting the widows and children. In 1942, the War Orphans Appeal started to raise funds for the widows and children of Australian soldiers who lost their lives. Today, that appeal is known as Legacy Week. Legacy raises funds through sales of merchandise like badges. Children who volunteer are the primary source of salespeople for the Legacy. They also use special events, sponsorships, dinners, banquets and other events to raise funds for the organisation. Legacy Week 2024. Sunday the 1st of September 2024 to Saturday the 8th of September 2024. The Public Relations and Community Engagement Committee will be organising events during Legacy Week where badges and legacy merchandise will be available for purchase. Saturday the 31st of August 2024, Erin Affair with the Army Cadets. Wednesday the 4th of September 2024, stall at Urimba Lisaro RSL Club. Sunday the 9th of September 2024, Westfield Tuggera with the Air Force Cadets. Contact the Legacy Office on 4323 4977 for more information. Centenarians. In an enduring testament to the life within our Legacy family, and for the 11th year in succession, we devote this article to recognising and congratulating those amongst us who have become centenarians since last August. Achieving this uniquely amazing occasion deservedly warrants great honour, and we take this moment to celebrate the treasure of their lives. We share the thoughts of 12 special ladies we honour at this time. Jean Wakefield, as told 17th of the 5th, 24. I was born in Sydney and remember our family moved from Croydon to Cabarita when I was around 10 years old, where soon after I attended Burwood Girls High School. Because I was always a bit of a quiet soul, I didn't have a great deal of friends, although I did enjoy playing tennis socially. Family life was simply enough for me, and at 16 years old after my intermediates, I started work at Sagewood Gardens, York Street, Sydney, following a calculator course. This is where I met the love of my life, Arthur. Although I was 1 year older, he didn't seem to mind, and I remember Arthur enlisted in the RAAF at 18 years old. On return from service, we married in 1949 and stayed on at the Cabarita rental with family providing care for them as needed before purchasing our own home at West Ryde. We were blessed with the birth of our son, Russell, in 1954, and both he and his wife have always been our greatest source of joy and support. Together with his family, now extended to include one grandchild and one great-grandchild, regular visits and daily phone calls brighten my days. They even gave me an iPad so that photos could be sent on the minute they were taken, making sure I missed nothing. In 1988, after a working life, Arthur and I retired to the Central Coast. Here, with some distance from family now, Arthur, a previously very involved sportsman in Sydney, gave it all away to be closer to me, and life seemed perfectly perfect. Our joys were from simple travels inside Australia, where he showed me more of our country than I could ever have imagined. I never had any desire to travel overseas. We have too much here to wander over. Though my vision is now failing, and as I approach 101, indelible memories of many special moments stay close and never dim in my heart. With some honesty, if I was asked how I have reached this age, I have no idea. Possibly through accepting anything life's thrown at me peacefully, with open arms, good or bad, and looking for the best in any situation with a gentle soul. For the record, I never smoked and always ate healthy, fresh foods. Ruth Binney, as told, 22nd of the 5th, 24. I was born February 1924 in a small town in Germany, close to the Baltic Sea. Family life was simple and included Mum, Dad and my brother, who was 4 years older than myself. At school, I remember loving any kind of physical culture and athletics. My first job was in the post office exchange area until I was later moved to accounts. During this time, I met and married a Dutchman, Hank, who worked for the airlines, spoke six languages, and had travelled extensively. He believed Australia was the place to be, full of opportunity and happier days. Though this move saddened my family, leaving them on the other side of the world, we arrived in Sydney in 1955 and made our home at Tamarama. Unfortunately, our marriage ended some years later and I found myself alone. We had no children, though they were something I would have loved to have been blessed with. Some years later, I remember attending the Phoenix Club, an over-50s singles meeting spot for a dance and a chat. This is where I met John. Though we were both quiet souls, our friendship blossomed into a wonderful love and we married in 1983. John had two remarkably caring, loving and attentive daughters, Margaret and Trish, and to this day they also remain daughters to me. John and I retired to the Central Coast, to this home at Forrester's Beach from Epping, some 18 years ago. I lost John, my love, 10 years ago, and continue to miss him every day. Interestingly, despite the years, I can still speak German quite fluently. Why do I think I have reached this age? As a very young girl, I remember my father built me an exercise bar to swing off. I have always loved walking and belonged to a walking club even into my 80s. At 40, I took up yoga and can still touch the floor without bending my knees. Even though I like champagne, I will only drink occasionally, and I eat lots of fruit and plenty of green vegetables every day. Every night I listen to André Rieu before sleeping, which helps me relax. Possibly the answer to that question then could be healthy habits and exercise, but the love of family cannot be underestimated. Ruth Colnut, as told, 5th of June, 24. I was born in West Wallsend, the third in line of four children. Dad was a miner, and when the coal mines closed during the Depression, he worked whenever, wherever he could. Mum looked after us all at home. Times were tough, we were poor, but as kids we had no idea. Local school life was happy with friends, and I remember playing Vigoro and really, otherwise, simply running around madly. I left school at 14 years old and started work in a mixed business in the main street of Wallsend. In 1942, helping out with manpower covering our boys overseas with the war, I then worked at Wallsend Hospital, cleaning, etc. In 1945, two girlfriends and I moved to Sydney to work at King George's Hospital. The following year, while doing some casual work at the Lyric Milk Bar at Railway Square, I met Harold. It was November 1946. He had come in for a milkshake, and immediately there was an undeniable attraction for us both. A whirlwind romance followed, and we were engaged January 1947 and married Anzac Day that same year. He was very persistent, though. With some honesty, I felt the same. Our home was initially a one-bedder at Newtown. Saving furiously, we managed to purchase a war service home at Camley Vale, and family life was simple but filled with love. I continued to work at the hospital, but have worn many other hats since then. We had two wonderful sons. My greatest sadnesses, though, was in losing son David in 1991 at 42 years old, then Harold in 1996. I remember we moved to the Central Coast around 1982 to retire and have been in my current home since 2005. These later years were filled with both overseas and Australian trips. Though I began losing my eyesight in 2009, I am now legally blind, the memories of our travels do not diminish in my heart or mind. I understand that sad moments hit all our lives, but the good times must outweigh them, and rest is our reason to continue. Why do I think I've met this age? I never smoked, only drank on very special occasions, and never associated with bad men. Mum and Dad had an extensive veggie garden, and we always ate fresh foods. Possibly also because I was always on Shanks's pony, always running around. Guess I didn't have time to get sick. In my almost 29 years with Legacy, I have always been well involved with torchies, social clubs and bus trips. From these inclusions, I consider myself fortunate to have made lifetime friendships and am grateful for Legacy's care of me. Rosalind Selberg, as told, 19th of the 6th, 24. I was born and grew up at North Ryde. My father had a poultry farm. I'm the seventh of 10 children. I went to primary school in North Ryde and high school in Gladesville. When I was around 15 or 16, I went out with a boy named John. We split because he went to the army. After high school, I got a job at Coles in Gladesville, earning nothing over 2 shillings and 6 pence. I then went on to work at the Nestle chocolate factory. I was at Nestle for a while, but before long I went to the army, where I stayed for 2 years. I was a corporal and worked in the office. I was to become a sergeant, but by that time the war had finished. It was in the army that I met my first husband, Timothy. We got married in 1946 and moved to Orange, where I had 3 children, and from there we had bought a house at West Ryde, where I had my other 4 children. All up, we had 1 daughter and 6 boys, Carol, Gary, Philip, Stephen, Jeffrey, John and Craig. Sadly, Timothy passed away at the young age of 50. I kept myself busy raising my children, and for a social life I played bowls at the local club at North Mead. When I was about 56, my brother saw an advertisement in one of the army newsletters from John, the boy I was with when I was younger. John's advertisement was to see if anybody knew where he could find me, so my brother gave me his phone number and I gave him a call. We were married 6 weeks later. I moved in with him in his home at Yumina. We got married in the park near the Gosford Leagues Club. We loved to travel and holiday in Foster every year and had a beautiful 12 years together, making wonderful memories. I was an avid reader at one stage in particular, Danielle Steele books. I had about 46 one time. However, due to being vision impaired, I had to give them away. I am lucky enough to have a magnifier to do my code busters, though. I'm the only one left of my siblings. Most of my sisters lived until their late 70s, and my mum and dad died early. My children are the secret to longevity. They visit me often to take me out, and they're always on the phone checking in on me. I'm still living independently, and I have help from Allcare, who are wonderful. I have some 22 grandchildren and about 25 great-grandchildren and 3 great-great-grandchildren. Audrey Turner, as told 23rd of the 5th, 24. I was born in Geelong, Victoria. My father was a vegetable farmer on a soldiers' settlement block in the Mallee district of Victoria, having served in World War I. My mother was an artist as well as being a housewife. I was the third born with 2 older sisters and a brother. I was 5 years old when we moved to a farm in Gippsland, investing in more fertile land. I started school in 1930 at Devon Meadows Primary School, a one-teacher school with a sewing mistress. We learned to write on slates with slate pencils. For pen writing, our wooden desks had inkwells, which had to be filled with black ink every day and us being covered in ink smudges. My mother was a very talented artist, painting mostly wildflowers growing in the bush where we lived. She would paint flowers on Christmas cards and sell them for 3 or 6 pence each to add to our meagre income. I was the ducks of the school, subsequently awarded a scholarship to attend university. I graduated as a dietitian, all whilst working on our family gladioli farm. After 4 years of education, inclusive of my practical component at St Vincent's Hospital, Melbourne, I was now a fully qualified dietitian. During this time, World War II had broken out. My mother talked me out of joining the army, and instead, I obtained a job at Royal Hobart Hospital in Tasmania, remaining there for 1 year, then on to Royal Perth Hospital for 2 years, before returning to Sydney for a position at Royal Alfred Hospital. I met my husband Roy at a New Year's Eve party in 1954. He was a barrister. Together we had 3 children, 2 sons and 1 daughter. We enjoyed a wonderful life together. However, shortly after my son's birth, Roy became unwell, suffering depression, consequently drinking heavily, which was a very difficult time for our family. As Roy was unable to work for many years, we were forced to live separately for some time. Our life changed dramatically. The years following, and as the children grew older, Roy's health was up and down. We eventually moved to Gosford. Roy enjoyed walking the children to school each morning. We were happy and enjoyed a great social life once more. 1 year later, Roy became physically unwell. The doctors dismissed anything serious, and sadly, Roy slipped into a coma and passed away suddenly. This was a very difficult time for the children and myself. However, I had to carry on and support my children. Without the ability to find work in dietetics, I applied for a teaching role and commenced my teaching qualification. I worked at various schools across the Central Coast. As time passed, I was offered a fantastic role as one of the first dietitians appointed to a community health team. I remained in this challenging position for the next 10 years. During this time, I was introduced to George through a work colleague. We married and enjoyed our life together, working, building our home, and eventually retiring and travelling. Our life together wasn't all smooth sailing. Unfortunately, at the age of 68, our home was significantly damaged by major flooding. We moved on, making another life in a different location. After the loss of my husband George to a battle with cancer, I purchased myself a villa within a retirement village, have enjoyed travelling on various cruises with friends, tending to my garden, and being part of the activities within the community. I have been enrolled as a beneficiary with Legacy since 2006. Marjorie Furze, as told, 3rd of the 6th, 24. Born in England, 26th of August, 1923. Emigrated to Australia when I was 4 years old. Married at 18 years old as it was wartime, and Edwin, husband, was going off to war. With security as it was, no one could cross the border to another state, and Ted was stationed in Queensland before being sent overseas. So I snuck over the border to see him before he left. At the time, he was going away for a year, so I stayed with a local butcher and his family who I'd never met before, and we have remained friends ever since. We eventually returned to New South Wales. During this time, we had 5 children, moved around to live in several Sydney suburbs such as Five Dock, Como and Earlwood, before moving to the Central Coast in 1957 to a property in Holgate, where we had a mixed farm. Enjoying an active social life over the years within my village community, a regular card player and devoted member of my local church. I now have 15 grandchildren, 22 great-grandchildren and 1 great-great-grandchild. Our family continues to grow in numbers. I have been enrolled with Central Coast New South Wales Legacy since October 2005. Jean Jackson, as told, 5th of the 6th, 24. Jean was born into a small family, the eldest of 2 daughters. A very positive person, Jean was keen to talk more about the highlights of her life, saying joining the RAAF at 18 years of age was when she really became alive. Jean commenced her service in the stationery department, climbing up and down ladders before an opportunity arose to show training films to young pilots. So I became a cinematographic operator, which was very interesting. I learnt a lot, she said. Jean served as a RAAF cinema operator in the RAAF between 1942 and 1945. Her last posting was RAAF Amberley, where she was discharged with the rank of sergeant after the war ended. Jean's husband, David Jackson, also served in the RAAF during World War II. He was a very brave signal telegraphist based on the Japanese-held island of Bougainville. After Jean was discharged, she went on to study to become a teacher, a profession she worked in for many years. She married and had 2 children before retiring to Wagstaff in 1994. Jean feels very fortunate for the life she has lived, despite her eyesight impairment due to macular degeneration, which Jean has learned to live with for more than a decade. Jean strongly believes enjoying life, socialising, caring for people, keeping your body and brain active and fit is the key to longevity and happiness. Her interests are varied. She stays fit with Pilates, listens to talking books, is a talented, knowledgeable gardener, an active elder of her local community and church. Jean has strong ethics and values, is open-minded and genuinely interested in others' points of view. Some recent highlights for Jean were presenting a wreath and heading up the Anzac Day parade in a vintage Jeep at Ipswich RSL. She was also invited onto Amberley RAAF base near Brisbane for a special private tour. Jean's family, friends and local community banded together to organise and celebrate Jean's 100th birthday party in the local hall. Jean speaks fondly of these momentous occasions. Linda Scherer, as told 30th of the 5th, 24. I was born in Beaconsfield, grew up in Rosebery and attended St Joseph's Primary School. I am the 10th child of 13. My younger sister, who recently turned 96, is still alive, and we keep in touch quite often. War broke out when I was 15, and since St. Joseph's only went up to intermediate, I started my training to be a dressmaker in town. During my training, my father was strict about his girls going into town. However, my boss wanted to keep me on, so I did, and was there for 11 years. I met my husband, George, a.k.a. Rusty, at the Catholic Church. Although he was a Baptist, the church ran a club for servicemen, and he would attend. My sister and I cooked the meals for them. He and my sister were great friends, and he used to help the girls get the chapel ready for Mass. One day, while he was helping us, my sister asked him to come to communion. I finally went out with him, and we got married 2 years later. My husband had been deemed medically unfit at 17 due to a stomach ulcer. When he was called up by National Service and finally got into the Navy, he had served 2 years there. During this time, we had our first child, Vicky. When I was pregnant with our second child, Mark, my husband and I found it hard to get a house to live in. Our friend at the time told us to come to Papua New Guinea. Mark was 5 months old before I could move over there. It was a long journey from Mascot to Lae, Papua New Guinea. However, it wasn't long before we made it our home. I was even lucky enough to have met the first Prime Minister, Michael Somare. At the time, he was not the Prime Minister, but he told me he would be eventually. While living in New Guinea, we had our twins, Scott and Joanne. My husband had finished 3 years of his contract and took a job as a public servant at Port Moresby, where we lived for the next 27 years. I had three more children, Anthony, Christopher and Michael. Our children went to boarding school for 6 years. They did not have access to TV. I kept myself quite busy within the community and did a lot of work for the Chinese. I would make lap-laps for the little boys. One of the Qantas girls found out I was a dressmaker, so she asked me to make her a dress for the Qantas ball, which I did, even though I only had 3 days' notice. We came back to Australia due to being transferred to South Australia. We were sad to leave Papua New Guinea, as we had made such a lovely life there. While in South Australia, our seven children were living in New South Wales. Eventually, my husband was told he could no longer work, and as a result, we moved to Gosford. When my husband was in and out of the hospital, he often made so many people happy. He was in the cancer ward and would often cheer the sick children up when he was well enough. After I lost him, I went up to Darwin to live with my son Scott. However, I ended up with malaria. I sold the house in Gosford, I then rented in Sydney, then on to Gorokan. I am having a big 100th birthday celebration at Wyong Leagues Club, and this will be the first time in 34 years I will have all my seven children together. I used to travel around to see my children. The last time I saw them all at the same time was at their father's funeral. I have 15 grandchildren, 20 great-grandchildren. I love sewing. I could do it all day. I think it's what keeps me young. I also love playing cards and thoroughly enjoy chocolate and my cups of tea. Irene Hewitt Dutton, as told, 30th of the 5th, 24. Born in Boston, Lincolnshire, England, the eldest of four children, two sisters and one brother, moved to Australia in 1952 for a better life. Irene's family remained in England, however. Both sisters have frequently travelled to Australia to visit over the years. Irene worked in Sydney as a bookbinder. This was a very enjoyable time. Irene learnt a lot about Australia through her work. Together, Irene and Sydney had three children, five grandchildren and nine great-grandchildren. Living in Sydney until 1984 before moving up to the Central Coast, we lived in several different suburbs over the years, some of those being Point Clare, Tascot and then on to Yumina. They travelled extensively around Australia and overseas. Following the loss of Sydney, Irene moved into her current home, a single level villa within a retirement village. As Irene says, is a wonderful community. Irene has lived here for 22 years. Recently, Irene's family organised a party with well over 50 attendees to celebrate her 100th birthday. The family have put together a beautiful book of photographs to remember this wonderful occasion. Dorothy Shields, as told, 14th of the 6th, 24. I was an only child born in North Sydney to very young parents, 17 and 19, who were married at the time. Grew up in Northbridge, where I attended a little private school. Then I went to Fort Street Girls High. I lived with my grandparents due to the separation of my parents. My grandparents had nothing, but they shared what they had. They were good, kind people. I had to leave in fourth year and get into the earning and living department in human resources. I think I grew up fast. I feel I was never a kid. I loved school and I loved to study. I went to business college and did a business course in shorthand typing, which I didn't like. I couldn't do what I wanted, which would have been social work. I decided to go into nursing, which my father opposed because he thought I was too sensitive. Despite what he said, I still wanted to give it a go. So worked in the children's hospital and realised my father was right. I put so much of my life into working there. I started to burn myself out. It was too hard. Then I went to work in Melbourne and on to London for a year. I had good, responsible jobs, mostly dealing with the human psyche, which I liked. When I came back to Australia, I decided to go back to university. One day I was studying and speaking to my mother, who told me I was boring and had a boring life. So I decided to join the golf club in Mona Vale, which is where I met my future husband, Gordon. He was divorced and had two children to his previous marriage. He was also a member of the golf club and would often drop his daughter at my bus stop. One day, he gave me a lift to the club, and after about 4 years dating, we got married. We had a marvellous 40 years together living in Mona Vale. We made our way up as far as Queensland to get a feel of where we wanted to live, but always found that we would come back to the Gosford area. We then moved to Kincumber in 1990, and I joined up with the local Anglican church. I have had a good and healthy life. I love to read and am still very passionate about psychology. I would say the key to longevity would be open-mindedness. To me, old age is always 15 years older than I am. Bernard Baruch. Beryl Hughes, as told 14th of the 6th, 24. My family and I came to Kilcare in the 1930s. I am second oldest of five children, three girls and two boys. Our house was quite famous, as my father spent the weekends developing the garden, planting trees to accommodate family occasions, such as birthdays, weddings and special events. A Norfolk pine was planted to celebrate the opening of the Harbour Bridge in 1932. It invited much interest with the locals and visitors. My father worked weekdays at Everly Railway Workshop. There was no electricity or town water. I went to Pretty Beach School and attended high school at Gosford. The only way I could get there was to catch a ferry, bus and train every day. I got my first job as an usherette at the cinema in Woi Woi, although I ended up getting to work at Pretty Beach Public School, where they kept me on as their cleaner for 38 years. During the war, I joined the Australian Women's Land Army, AWLA. The average working week for an AWLA member was 48 hours, with pay starting at the AWLA minimum wage of 30 shillings a week. Permanent members were also entitled to sick pay. Women were paid much less than their male counterparts for the same work, which covered a variety of agricultural labours, such as vegetable and fruit growing, pig and poultry raising, and sheep and wool work. For many years I had a pen friend, Megan, in Wales, whose family had decided to come to Australia. Sadly, one day I received a letter from Megan's husband, Emlyn, to advise Megan had passed away. Emlyn still came to Australia, and I helped him settle, and I went on to marry him in 1960. Together we had three children, David, Michael and Gwyn. I believe I made it to 100 because I've never smoked and just got on with it. No use complaining. I have four grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. Valerie Fitzgerald, as told 14th of the 6th, 24. I was born at Burwood in Sydney and spent my growing up in Strathfield. I went to South Strathfield School, Liverpool Road. I was an only child for nearly 12 years until my sister was born. She is now 89 and is living near Swansea. We are still in touch and see each other as often as possible. When she was a baby, I would take her for walks around the block in the pram. I did this until she started going to school. I had known my husband Brian since we were about 15. Our families had known each other. When he was a cadet in the Navy, we would write letters back and forth to one another all the time. We got married and started a family in 1945, while he continued to work for the Navy. After living with my mother for some time, we managed to get a block of land and built a house in Greenacre. From there, we moved to Yagoona. After a while there, we settled in Tookley. We did lots of travelling together and did lots of trips all around Australia. We absolutely loved our travelling adventures. We loved to walk and would do this often. My husband was an avid marathon runner. We had four children together, three sons and a daughter. My children are great. They often come and visit me and are always in contact. My son lives very close by and is very attentive. One son and daughter live in Sydney. I have eight grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. I have loved watching my children grow up and create their own families. The facility where I live held a lovely morning tea for my 100th birthday. My sister attended and my children and grandchildren. I have been here for about 5 years. I don't know the answer to longevity. Each day comes and goes. Some are good, some are not so good. Welfare officers Parsons, Stoker and Heenan. Age is no barrier. It's a limitation you put on your mind. Jackie Joyner Kersey.
Anzac Day, Central Coast, 2024. By Legatee Mark Gattenhoff. My Anzac Day was spent on the Central Coast. I attended the dawn service at Urimba RSL, and later on I attended an Anzac Day service at the Palmdale Lawn Cemetery, accompanied by my wife, Marilyn, and son, Peter. I laid a wreath on behalf of Central Coast New South Wales Legacy. I have attended many Anzac Day services, as you all have, and I reckon the one at Palmdale was one of the best I've been to. We even had an RAAF jet flyover.
Mother's Day. Legatee Elizabeth Ward's Mother's Day Address 2024. Whenever legatees gather together, our first official duty is to honour the fallen and to give thanks to those who have served or who serve currently in the Australian Defence Force. Today I want to thank you, the wives, partners and grandmothers and great-grandmothers, for your service. I admire and respect all that you have done and all that you represent. Women have always served in essential roles within our close circle of family, friends and community. Women in our armed forces serve in combat, and since the Crimean War, nurses have saved lives and given comfort to the injured on many battlefields. Women perform public service. In our lifetime, 132 women have occupied roles as heads of states, as prime ministers and presidents. They were either elected representatives or were appointed to their positions. The list does not include monarchs or viceregal appointments. Many of these women were mothers. Women who were mothers excelled in science and medicine. One of the most renowned was Marie Curie. Madame Curie discovered radium and polonium. She was awarded the Nobel Prize twice, and later her daughter, Irene Joliet Curie, was also awarded the Nobel Prize for her work in chemistry. Madame Marie Curie used her work with radium to design X-ray machines, and her little Curie's mobile X-ray machines were credited with saving the lives of 1 million servicemen during World War I. Women activists delivered many of the rights and freedoms that we take for granted. The Pankhursts in the UK and Elizabeth Cady Stanton in the USA fought for the vote for women. Mary Wollstonecraft, the mother of Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, was a celebrated feminist and activist. Sojourner Truth, an African-American, was an abolitionist who fought tirelessly to put an end to slavery. When she and her daughter escaped from their captivity, she learned on that day of her son being sold into slavery. Josephine Baker symbolized the beauty of Black American culture. She was born in 1906 into abject poverty in the state of Missouri. She left school before the age of 10 to support her fatherless family. She later became famous for her flamboyant dance routines, and in 1923 she moved to Paris, where she was celebrated as a music hall entertainer and achieved star billing at the famous Folies Bergères. During the German occupation of France in World War II, Josephine Baker worked with the Red Cross and the French Resistance. She entertained French free forces in Africa and the Middle East. She was later awarded the Croix de Guerre and the Legion of Honour. In the 1940s, Josephine Baker had an emergency hysterectomy. She wanted to be a mother and went on to adopt 12 children from many different races and with various skin colours. She maintained that raising children with love and respect for others would defeat racism. Audrey Hepburn was a survivor of the German occupation of Holland during World War II. At the end of her acting career, she became the ambassador for UNESCO and devoted her time to trying to improve the lives of children who live in utter deprivation. Audrey Hepburn worked tirelessly for them until just before her death from stomach cancer in 1993. The first haute couture fashion house was established by Jean Lanvin in Paris in 1889. She was a milliner. The birth of her daughter Marguerite inspired her to design exquisite clothes for children. The business was such a success that Lanvin decided to expand her business and to set up a fashion house, the very first haute couture for women and later for men. That business continues to this day. Lanvin perfumes remain famous. Perhaps the best known is Arpège, which was designed as a gift to her daughter on her 30th birthday. It is estimated today across the globe that 30% of businesses are started and run by women, many of whom are mothers. In fact, such is the growth in their numbers that a new word has entered the lexicon, mompreneurs. The oldest woman to give birth was 73 when she gave birth to twins in southern India. I'm sure you remember Coco Chanel. She too started out as a milliner in Deauville, France, before moving to Paris, where she revolutionised clothes for women. Coco Chanel gave this advice to women: at 30, be gorgeous, at 40, be charming, and be irresistible for the rest of your life. So, for those of us who are somewhere between 40 and 140, remember always that we are irresistible. Have a wonderful and very happy Mother's Day, and let's meet again very soon.
Widows Social Clubs. Central Coast New South Wales Legacy operates Widows Social Clubs at various locations across the Central Coast. Our social clubs provide an opportunity for our enrolled beneficiaries to get together for a social catch-up, have a cuppa and a bicky, discuss social events, including regular bus trips, bingo days, morning teas, luncheons and other events that may interest our beneficiaries. Transport can be arranged for our beneficiaries to attend the meetings. Each meeting is attended by our legatee liaison officers and also one of our welfare officers. If you are interested in attending one of our widows clubs, please contact the Legacy office on 1-800-LEGACY. That's 1-800-534-229 or 4323-4977.
History of the Central Coast, Mangrove Mountain. The Mangrove Mountain area extends from Peats Ridge and Somersby in the east to Culnura in the west, down to Glenworth Valley, Lower Mangrove and Spencer in the south. This is a rich historical area first inhabited by our First Nations Indigenous people, then settled by European people, some of them from the First Fleet, including convicts. Sadly, in the early days there were some skirmishes between the local Indigenous people and the European settlers. These skirmishes eventually settled down and the land quickly became cultivated, supplying Sydney Township with a variety of produce. The produce cultivated in the Mangrove Mountain area travelled to Sydney mainly by boat down the picturesque Hawkesbury River. The first ferry crossing of the Hawkesbury River was established at Wiseman's Ferry, which opened a rudimentary road network mainly built by convict labour. The ferry crossing was also the beginning of the Great Northern Road, linking Sydney with Newcastle. With the road network extending into the Mangrove Mountain area, then onto the Central Coast, more people settled in the area, establishing farms producing a variety of produce, which included vegetables, poultry, dairy products, fruits of all types, and a large supply of citrus fruits. World War I came upon the young nation of Australia, with many local men and women from the area involved. After the war had finished, parcels of land were allocated to soldier settlers by the New South Wales government in the Mangrove Mountain region. This land distribution increased the farm acreage in the area and increased the production of farm produce, especially in citrus fruits. Between World War I and II, the Mangrove Mountain area thrived. It was not until the end of World War II in 1945 that the Peats Ferry Bridge, now known as the Old Hawkesbury River Bridge, opened, carrying the Pacific Highway to northern New South Wales and Queensland. The railway bridge over the Hawkesbury River had already opened in 1889, which had created a goods service from Gosford to Sydney for produce from the Mangrove Mountain region, especially citrus fruits. My connection with the Mangrove Mountain region began in the 1960s. During weekends, I came up to the old historic halls in the area on weekends, square dancing with my girlfriend. We had some great local bands playing and won a few dance competitions. I knew a lot of local Mangrove Mountain families from connections with their sons and daughters from Gosford High School. When I returned to the Central Coast from my Army Reserve officer training, I commanded the local platoon based at the Erina Army Depot. One of my platoon members was Phil Woodbury, whose family are one of the oldest families on the Central Coast. If you are travelling around the Central Coast today, you will see the name Woodbury on bridges, roads and other landmarks on the coast, especially around the Mangrove Creek, Spencer, Yarramalong and Wyong areas. Phil Woodbury opened his extensive property at Lower Mangrove for use by my platoon during training weekends, which was very generous of him. Other platoon members that lived in the Mangrove Mountain area invited members of the platoon onto their properties to help in pest extermination. Moving along to Mangrove Mountain today, the whole area has changed dramatically, especially in the farming area. New types of farms have sprung up: pecan farms, fig farms, sunflower farms, native plant nursery, honey production, alpaca farms, horse studs, and a citrus juice factory, to name a few. Citrus orchards are still being farmed, though greatly diminished. Poultry and vegetable farms are also still flourishing in the area. The Mangrove Mountain area has become a popular tourist destination. with local strong community associations, including an excellent local community news, the Country Women's Association, Central Coast Council Visitor Centre supporting the area. Recently, the annual Harvest Festival was held over the long weekend in June, with thousands of visitors attending local farms, food-serving venues and free music entertainment. Two local community members were recently awarded Volunteers of the Year for their tireless community volunteering in the Mangrove Mountain area. One of these gentlemen is Keith Aranyo, editor of the Community News, and the other is Ryan Howard, manager of the Mangrove Mountain Hall. Legatee David Ferry.
Legatee's Public Relations. From Legatee Bailey, Central Coast Legacy beneficiary Wes Weir and I attended the annual RSL Legacy Bowls Day held at Everglades. About 150 bowlers from eight different Central Coast bowls clubs attended. A club luncheon was provided afterwards. About 40% of these bowlers are ex-service personnel. Both Wes and I were invited guests and were seated at the top table. On behalf of Central Coast Legacy, I accepted a cheque donation of $500 and delivered a thank you and PR speech that went over very well. Legatees Peter Tobin and Terry McGregor manned a stall at the CCC Seniors Expo, which was held at Wyong Race Club, selling merchandise promoting the work of Central Coast New South Wales Legacy across the coast. Legatee Nigel Parker delivered Mother's Day hampers. This year we had another first, with our legatees assisting legacy staff to deliver 40 Mother's Day hampers to some of our enrolled beneficiaries. This was made possible because of a generous donation of $15,000 from the Beaumas Motorcycle Club late last year. The donation covered the costs of both the Christmas and Mother's Day hampers. Legatee Stephen Bailey was presented with a donation cheque from Summerland Point Sports Club, which is owned by Doyleson RSL Sporties. On Anzac Day, staff and some local heroes collected money from club patrons, raising just under $500. Staff members Luke and Kayleen presented the cheque. Legatee Karen Dryden and Legatee David Ferry accepted the $783.40 cheque from CEO Lachlan Ford, Mangrove Mountain Memorial Club and Golf Course. Please visit the club. The views are magnificent and the restaurant food is the best. Southern Launch Work Experience by Jude Hill. I enjoyed myself and learnt a lot during my week at Southern Launch for work experience. Throughout the experience, we learnt from mechanical, astro, electrical, aeronautical and mechatronic engineers who taught us about all the different systems of a rocket. Not only did we learn theory from the engineers, but also practically by going to industries that design and construct different parts, systems and packages of rockets. We even got to blueprint and create our own water bottle rockets with everything we had learnt during the week. Tuesday. On the first day of work experience with Southern Launch, I was nervous and excited about what the week had to bring. Although I didn't have much experience with engineering, I was fascinated with mathematics, physics, chemistry, and supplemental sciences. We were taken on a facility tour by Travis and met the team in their weekly meeting. After this, to end the morning, we did a Careers in Space workshop, where we researched jobs in the industry to find out what would suit us, what we liked and what education we would need to enter the profession. After lunch, we had an introduction to water bottle rockets and an aerostructures workshop. I learnt about the aerodynamics and general factors of physics upon flying rockets and compulsion systems aboard them, such as laws of motion, weight distribution, oxidisation and much more. The first day was fun and exceeded my expectations. I learnt a lot and got significantly more confident and more intrigued by what the week had to come. Wednesday. Wednesday consisted of a flight systems workshop and two industry visits. We learnt about avionics inside of rocket systems. We created a flow chart and listed certain sensors, such as an accelerometer or gyroscope that could be found inside of rocket ship avionics, determining safety, path, control, and data of a particular mission. Later we played with the coding of Arduino. We then had lunch and visited Aerobond. We went to two of their facilities where they manufactured sheet metal and advanced composites for rockets and planes. They showed us around their spray room, clean room, grinding room, and general workspace and equipment. The second industry tour was at Innovor Technologies, a satellite manufacturing and controlling company. When we arrived, we were brought around their facilities where they harboured and manned their satellites. Thursday morning, we did a flight safety analysis and regulatory approvals workshop, where we learnt about the safety that goes into launching a rocket and the restrictions and barriers needed to be worked through to conduct a mission safely. Correlating directly to what we would need to consider for our rocket, such as a countdown, happening to be our first task of the day, as well as a water bottle rocket design with the information we had gained throughout the past 3 days. After lunch, we spent the rest of the day designing the countdown, bottle configuration, fin design, and water volume we would need to finish to have a rocket reach the best apogee it possibly could. By the end of the work experience day, we had run a few simulations, done the math, and used the physics to begin construction with 2 rockets. Our team name was Orion, after the Orion Nebula, as it has a visual magnitude of 4 and 4 main stars, Orion A, Orion B, etc., as we had 4 members in our group. Our 2 rockets were named Bellatrix, after a star in the Orion constellation, and Titan, a moon of Saturn found by Nicolas-Claude Fabre de Peiresque, who also found the Orion Nebula. Before leaving, we had cut and glued our fin designs. Friday. On Friday, we got straight to work to complete our rockets. We finished cutting, taping, and designing. Once we had run some final simulations and worked out specific weights, we decorated our rocket with the mission badge and went to launch them. There were 5 rockets in total between the 2 teams and the Southern Launch Engineers rocket. Our 2 rockets, Titan, our 2-litre bottle rocket, and Bellatrix, our 1.25-litre rocket, were ready to have the avionics put in and taped up. After the other team's first rocket was launched, we decided to launch Bellatrix first, as we were uncertain about her design. This was as it was made to spin with slanted fins, but all went well and the rocket's spinning allowed asymmetrical mass to be equally distributed in flight. After the other team's second rocket, we launched Titan, and it went very well. Then the engineer's water rocket was launched. After the launches, we went back to Southern Launch HQ and had pizza for lunch to celebrate the week. In conclusion, I enjoyed my week at Southern Launch greatly, and I learnt a great deal of new things. It has further intrigued me about science and engineering. I'm very grateful to everyone at Southern Launch for making this experience amazing, fun, and enlightening. Thank you, Legacy, for getting me to Adelaide and helping me to narrow down what I would like to do with my future. Jude Hill.
Poem: A Dog's Life by Patricia Heathfield. Another dog story. My niece's dog, Oscar. This is a true story. Happened just as I've recorded. They call me Oscar. They say I'm a bitzer. But here in Lane Cove, they all call me Mister. The right address is a must, you know, for it gives me respect wherever I go. 5-star treatment is what I get there, with fine food and treats and plenty of care. I have my own bed and sleep in the house. I wouldn't fare better if I were the spouse. But alas, alack, I've been dealt a hard blow. They've gone overseas and I've hit Skid Row. I can only compare it to life with the Sallies, for I've been sent north to stay with the Rellies. They have 2 dogs themselves, so I come in 3rd. They look at my background and call me a nerd. My bed's been usurped and I'm out in the cold. My coat's all bedraggled, and I think I have mould. I now share my treats with those other 2. I don't make a fuss, that just wouldn't do. When I think what she'll say, I go weak at the knees, if my mistress returns and finds I have fleas. I know what they have planned at the end of my stay. They'll shampoo and brush me so I don't look like a stray. And my mistress will say, why, he looks good as new. But you'll never know what a time I've been through.
Outsmarting a Computer by Legatee Peter Tobin. I was on the bus with Chris, and we stopped at the Doylo for lunch. I went in with the ladies, and at reception we all showed our ID card or driver's license for check-in. One of our ladies, Joy, don't know her surname, was told that she was underage and the check-in system would not allow her entry. We were all a bit taken aback. Joy then told them that she had just turned 101 and she was clearly not underage. We all had a good laugh. It turned out the system does not recognise a number over 100, and it was telling them that she was 1 year old.
Book review, Lies My Mirror Told Me by Wendy Harmer. Wendy's tale of overcoming adversity is told with her trademark in-your-face frankness and wit. From being born with a severe facial deformity to performing as a stand-up comedian, a national television host, then as the highest-paid woman in FM radio, she has had an extraordinary life. Starting life in rural Victoria, Wendy describes her childhood in remote country schools. As her teacher father moved around the state to take up new postings, Wendy, the funny-looking kid, often in the wrong colour school uniform, developed strategies to find new friends and fit in. Her mother left the family home when Wendy was 10 years old and, as the eldest, cared for her three siblings. They called themselves the Famous Four and became a close-knit group. Wendy was in her teens when she had reconstructive facial surgery that wasn't as successful as she had hoped. Despite her initial setbacks and emotional turmoil, Wendy showed her strength of character as she carved her own way in the world. She would make her mark internationally before coming home to entertain Australians for 4 decades on stage, in print, television and broadcasting. During the course of Wendy's writings, this memoir is deeply moving, wise, hilarious and raucous. Pamela Morton. Kathy's Kitchen. Cheats Chips. Courtesy of the late Bill Granger. Sometimes in winter it's great to indulge yourself, but these chips are not deep fried. Enough for 2. 3 large potatoes, peeled and cut into thick chips. Salt. 2 tablespoons of olive oil. 3 tablespoons finely grated Parmesan cheese. 1 tablespoon finely chopped flat leaf parsley. Method. Preheat oven to 220 degrees Celsius. While oven is warming, steam potatoes for 7 to 8 minutes. They will only be par-cooked and not completely tender. Toss with olive oil and place on baking tray lined with non-stick baking paper. Sprinkle with salt and bake for 20 minutes. Remove and sprinkle with half the Parmesan cheese and half the parsley. Return to oven for another 10 minutes or till chips are crisp and golden. Remove and sprinkle with remaining Parmesan and parsley and enjoy. Widows Social Club Meetings. Sunflower Club meets at Etalong Beach Diggers Club on the first and third Friday of each month at 10 a.m. with a monthly social outing on the third Wednesday of each month. The Entrance Long Jetty Widows Club meet at Diggers at the Entrance on the third Monday of each month at 10 a.m. and a monthly social outing is the first Wednesday of each month. Tookley Widows Club meets at the Aerie, Tookley, on the first Monday of each month at 10 a.m. with a social outing on the third Thursday of each month. Wattle Club meets at Erina Leagues Club on the first and third Thursday of the month at 10 a.m. with a social outing on the fourth Friday of each month. Rosemary Widows Club meet at the Aerie, Tookley, on the second Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. with the social outing on the fourth Wednesday of the month. For further information about our social clubs, please call 4323 4977. From our readers. To dear staff and legatees at Central Coast New South Wales Legacy, I am just writing a few lines to thank you all so much for the lovely flowers I received on my 100th birthday. Thank you for all the help you have given me and helped me with my 2 sons, one of which passed away last year. I miss him so much. My family are very kind to me. I can't see too good to write. I would like to say a big thank you once again for the lovely flowers. I had a nice day with family. I love reading Chatterbox. May God bless you and a big thank you. BH. Dear executive and staff, may I say a big thank you for the recent gift of beautiful flowers delivered by legatee Karen Patterson on the occasion of my 80th birthday. Coincidentally, my copy of Chatterbox arrived that afternoon, and in it, Karen's heartwarming story. Karen is well suited being a legatee as she is a caring, bright, happy person, and we shared memories of her dad and my husband, both of whom died during the Vietnam conflict. Sincerely yours, J.R. Legacy and staff, Many thanks for the wonderful box of flowers for my 90th birthday. I was in shock when Karen delivered them. My son wouldn't let me leave the house till I had a visitor. Thank you, BN. To Central Coast Legacy, I'm writing to thank you for my birthday card and to thank you for the lovely Mother's Day lunch you put on for us all. Please find enclosed a small donation to help for all the great things you do for all. Yours sincerely, PD. Dear legatees and staff, thank you for the lovely flowers you gave me for my 90th birthday. It was a very nice surprise to receive the flowers and birthday card. The help and support Legacy has given to me has been very much appreciated. Yours sincerely, G. McP. To Central Coast, New South Wales Legacy, thank you for your kind invitation for Mother's Day on the 10th of May. I enjoyed myself last year, it was great, but unfortunately I cannot attend this year as my new great-grandson is arriving that week from Port Lincoln, South Australia, just 4 months old. Sorry, unable to attend, but I know you will all have a great time. B.N. To the wonderful, hard-working team at Gosford Legacy, I wanted to express my appreciation for the beautiful Mother's Day luncheon. Everything was so lovely. Music, songs, magic food, service incredible. Everything perfect. So kind from all of you. Love, C.K. Dear Peter and Heather, would you please thank all your wonderful staff for the lovely birthday card and notes that you all sent me for my recent birthday? Thank you all too for your thoughts during my recent illness, which I did really appreciate. I'm still not 100%, but am slowly getting my strength and fitness back. I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow at the time of our widow's Mother's Day lunch, so unfortunately I will have to be an apology, which I am sad about. I know the widows will love it, and especially the magnificent effort you also do for our ladies. I will hopefully be at our next monthly meeting. R.C. Vale. Juliet Barker. Kathleen Bender. Betty Best. Beryl Butler. Jean Clancy. Heather Cummins. Mary Dalton. Thora Dan. Vera Fell Marston. Mary Fleming. Doris Freer. Elaine Hartley. Beverly Henderson. Beryl King. Wilga King. Eileen Kirk. Joyce Lee. Patricia Luxford. Edna Manson. Shirley Martin. Diane McCarran. Elaine Mudge. Sheila Riley. Eunice Robinson. Melina Rourke. Jesse Seacombe. Winifred Selwood. Doreen Stops. Maria Stubbs. Patricia White. Kathleen Williams. Muriel Williamson. Marion Wilson. Veronica Woods. Tread softly, for you walk on my dreams. Marketing and nuisance calls. If you feel you're getting too many marketing or nuisance calls, you can contact the Do Not Call Register on 1300 792 958 or go to donotcall.gov.au. Some organisations that have your consent or are exempt may still call you occasionally. Chatterbox on audio CD. Many of our enrolled beneficiaries receive copies of Chatterbox on audio CD. If you are a sight-impaired enrolled beneficiary, or know someone who is, you can access an audio edition via MP3 or audio CD. If you would like an audio version of Chatterbox, please contact the Legacy Office on 4323 4977.
Continuing our legacy of care. There is a form provided in the print edition of Chatterbox. At the top of the form, there are two tick boxes if you would like information sent to you about how to help as a Legacy volunteer or how to make a bequest to Legacy. Underneath that, there is a space provided to write the dollar amount of your gift to the Legacy family and tick boxes to indicate whether a cheque is enclosed or whether you would like Legacy to debit your credit card. There is also a space for your credit card number and to indicate whether your card is Visa, Amex or MasterCard. You are then required to write the name on the card's expiry date, the CVN number, see note, your signature, your address and postcode, and your telephone number. All donations over $2 are tax deductible. Please return this coupon to Brisbane Water, New South Wales, Legacy, Post Office Box 4252, East Gosford, New South Wales, 2250. Note, the CVN number is the number that provides extra security for online payments. It's a 3-digit number on the back of Visa or MasterCard credit cards, or a 4-digit number on the back of an Amex card.
The lighter side of life. To those of us who have children in our lives, whether they are our own, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, or students, here is something to make you chuckle. Whenever your children are out of control, you can take comfort from the thought that even God's omnipotence did not extend to his own children. After creating heaven and earth, God created Adam and Eve, and the first thing he said was, "Don't." "Don't what?" Adam replied. "Don't eat the forbidden fruit," God said. "Forbidden fruit? We have forbidden fruit? Hey, Eve, we have forbidden fruit. No way. Yes, way." "Do not eat the fruit," God said. "Why?" "Because I am your father and I said so," God replied, wondering why he hadn't stopped creation after making the elephants. A few minutes later, God saw his children having an apple break and he was ticked off. "Didn't I tell you not to eat the fruit?" God asked. "Uh-huh," Adam replied. "Then why did you?" said the father. "I don't know," said Eve. "She started it," Adam said. "Did not." "Did too." "Did not." Having had it with the two of them, God's punishment was that Adam and Eve should have children of their own. Thus the pattern was set, and it has never changed. But there is reassurance in the story. If you have persistently and lovingly tried to give children wisdom and they haven't taken it, don't be hard on yourself. If God had trouble raising children, what makes you think it would be a piece of cake for you? Things to think about. 1. You spend the first 2 years of their life teaching them to walk and talk. Then you spend the next 16 telling them to sit down and shut up. 2. Grandchildren are God's reward for not killing your own children. 3. Mothers of teens know why some animals eat their young. 4. Children seldom misquote you. In fact, they usually repeat word for word what you shouldn't have said. 5. The main purpose of holding children's parties is to remind yourself that there are children more awful than your own. 6. We childproofed our homes, but they're still getting in. Double advice for the day. Be nice to your kids. They will choose your nursing home one day. If you have a lot of tension and you get a headache, do what it says on the aspirin bottle. Take 2 aspirin and keep away from children. Life's big questions. Why do we press harder on a remote control when we know the batteries are flat? Why do banks charge a fee on insufficient funds when they know there's not enough? Does pushing the elevator button more than once make it arrive faster? How is it that we put a man on the moon before we figured out it would be a good idea to put wheels on luggage? Why do toasters always have a setting so high that could burn the toast to a horrible crisp, which no decent human being would eat? In the Garden with Roz Bailey. Gardening regrets? I've had a few, but in the end, I did it my way. If you've been an avid gardener for many years, you will, of course, have had your own gardening regrets and lessons learned. It's only when I contemplate this topic that I realise I've had more than my fair share. Most notably was the spectacular idea to grow the world's largest rambling rose. You see, at that time I was gardening on small acres and had plenty of space, so I planted a Kiftsgate rose, thinking it just the ticket to cover a neighbouring wire fence, also on acres. Known as an extremely vigorous rambling rose, bearing masses of small white fragrant flowers, I religiously threaded the long thorny whippy canes horizontally along the fence, and for a few years it was a picture, and then became a lot of pruning. These delicate English ramblers, however, do an entirely different thing here in Australia. After one particularly rainy summer, my neighbour begged me to take it out, as the long and viciously thorny canes would reach out 4 metres or more, literally growing overnight to his side of the fence. He kept getting ripped to pieces on his ride-on lawnmower going anywhere near it. This led me to pondering other such regretful choices I've made. The next biggest regret is an easy one, letting the chooks free range during the day, supposedly in and around the veggie beds and fruit trees. But eventually they discovered a whole new bed to scat and peck through, way over past our miniature horse's yard, definitely past where they were allowed to go. This bed was the beginning of the rose, bulbs and perennial beds, definitely out of bounds, but keeping them away was a disaster, and they eventually led to the bane of my gardening existence, onion weed, scattered far and wide for forevermore. That's when we finally built a large yard for them to free range in during the day, around the compost bays and fig tree. But of course, the damage was done. Forevermore to fight the good fight with onion weed bulbs. The next disaster in my ranking would most likely be the pennywort. I know, I can hear you all cringing. We lived near the base of the Blue Mountains, far removed from the beachy areas that have always known its curse. Over the years, we had put in a naturalized koi pond down the sloping yard away from the house, but still in close view. It was a whole new way to plant and garden over the years, and for me a huge learning curve. Whether I'd planted it unknowingly or it came in with a water plant I'd sourced, I'll never know, but it became the unwelcome guest never to leave. Poking its way through the pond liner in places, threading under and over the sandstone rocks edging the pond, and just off and away in the other direction towards the lawn. I still shake my head when I recall the hours spent, carefully painting the round waxy leaves, thinking, aha, I've got you this season, only to find it poke through somewhere else, usually right through the middle of a shrub's root system. And then, of course, there was the ficus tree episode. It became apparent when, after a few years, the variegated ficus tree that was in a pot outside my kitchen window, sitting on a bed of pebbles and mondo grass mounds, of which the many litters of golden retriever puppies we bred delighted romping in, began to grow exponentially. Never a good sign. Sure enough, those tricky water-seeking roots found a way of breaking the saucer sneakily and diving down, down, down. And up, up, up went the tree. A beautiful specimen complete with stupid pigeon nests. All had to go. I say stupid pigeons, as we discovered each year with their various nests throughout the wisteria around the veranda. As their babies grew, they regularly fell out of their shabbily made nests. Four crossed sticks does not make a nest. Pigeons have no idea. Unlike the tiny wrens down the far back gardens with their tightly woven little luxury cocoon nests. However, one never really does account for mature growth when planting, even when we think we do. Proof was in the two massive columnar pines we made an arch of. Great for a few years, but eventually they grew so big and healthy that you could barely squeeze through at times. And then there was the wooden arbor we bought second hand. It certainly looked sturdy and just what I was after. If only the blooming thing would stay up. In the first 6 months it came down so many times, regardless of our staking efforts. In the end, we conceded defeat and bought a pretty metal one that stayed put. And I will always regret planting a grafted passion fruit too, which forevermore suckered for miles. I know there were many more such failures in the 20 years I gardened at Bloomfield Cottage, and I'm sure you will recall an epic fail or two in your gardening endeavours.
Advertisements. Legal appointments available to all enrolled beneficiaries every Tuesday at Legacy Village, 51-57 Masons Parade, Point Frederick. Please call the Legacy office on 4323 4977 to make an appointment. Creighton's Funeral Service, Greenway Chapel and Memorial Gardens, and Palmdale Lawn Cemetery and Memorial Park. Caring for you and your loved ones since 1843. Lock in the price today with a prepaid memorial site and funeral plan. Ask us how on our 24/7 care line, 1300 130 955. Website, creighton's funeralservice.com.au. Contact details. Editorial Committee. Editor, David Ferry. 0401 715 184. Members, Mark Gattenhoff and David Harris. Legacy Executive, President, Patrick Gallagher. 0420 564 685, Vice President Bob Lowry, 0407 911 390, Legacy Village, 51-57 Mason's Parade, Point Frederick, phone 02-4323-4977, fax 02-4323-4458, email legacy@cclegacy.com.au. Publishing and Copyright Statement. Copyright Central Coast New South Wales Legacy. Reproduction in whole or in part is prohibited without prior written consent from Central Coast New South Wales Legacy. All rights reserved. Central Coast New South Wales Legacy does not warrant that the information available in this magazine is accurate, complete, or current. Opinions expressed are those of the respective authors and not necessarily those of Central Coast New South Wales Legacy. Closing announcement. This concludes the recording of Legacy Chatterbox, issue number 102 for August 2024 from Legacy Central Coast, New South Wales. Care has been taken in the recording of this publication, but Vision Australia does not accept responsibility for the results of specific action taken based on this recording, nor for any error, omission, or incorrect pronunciation. This recording is copyright. No unauthorised copying, broadcasting, or public performance is permitted.